I'm Ed Adams, and you're listening to the AFCA Podcast. Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's been a minute, but we're kicking off season two with the one and only Deborah Martin Chase. I'll tell you more after the break. The AFCA Podcast is sponsored by Morgan Stanley Global Sports and Entertainment. When it comes to who's who in Hollywood, there is only one producer that comes to mind, Deborah Martin Chase. Deborah is one of the most successful producers in the business with a filmography of box office wins for over 20 years. Films like Courage Under Fire, Just Right, and The Princess Diaries, along with TV film phenoms like the Cheetah Girls franchise, are just a few of her projects. But Deborah is more of a unicorn in Hollywood. Don't believe me? Take a look at her body of work and you'll see she champions stories about people of color and women that positively add to America's diversity on screens large and small. Now take a listen to this for a minute.
Rescuing slaves requires skill and careful planning. It requires reading, Harriet. Can you read a sign or a map? Can you read it all?
I put my attention on trying to hear God's voice more clearly.
Do you know what would happen if you got caught? They would torture you until you pointed them right to this office. You got lucky, Harriet. And there's nothing more you can do.
Don't you tell me what I can't do. I made it this far on my own. God was watching, but my feet was my own. Running, bleeding, climbing, nearly drowned. Nothing to eat for days and days, man. I made it. So don't you tell me what I can't do.
That was a scene from her latest film, Harriet, and it has the industry buzzing. This is an action-packed film that breaks down the traditional stereotype of one of America's most iconic heroes, Harriet Tubman, who led hundreds of slaves to freedom. Starring Cynthia Erivo in the title role, Harriet is fearless and shows how brilliant, resourceful, cunning, and brave she really was. Harriet was co-written and directed by Cassie Lemons and also stars Leslie Odom Jr. and Joe Alwyn. Recently, I spoke with Deborah via Skype about her work, what motivates her, and her film, Harriet. Deborah Martin Chase, welcome to the AFCA Podcast.
I am very happy to be joining you today.
Thank you. I have to say, side note, one of my favorite soundtracks of all time is in one of your films, The Preacher's Wife.
Preacher's Wife?
Yes. It is like one of my favorite soundtracks.
I think it may still be the best-selling gospel album of all time. I mean, it was at the time, and it held on to that position for a very long time. But, it was a great one.
So, since we're talking about the Uber producer that you are, talk to me about specifically even with this, like you got Annie Lennox to write some of these songs. Like when you're producing, what is your method operandi? Like, how do you pull things together? What's your mantra?
Well, listen, in fairness on that one, I had Clive Davis getting Annie Lennox. But there are other soundtracks that I have put together. You know, every project is different.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on, I start with a vision for the movie, whether it be, and I look for movies everywhere, scripts, articles, original ideas. Obviously, books have been very important to me. Old movies, The Preacher's Wife was a remake of The Bishop's Wife, an old Cary Grant movie. And then it really is about building the best team possible. Finding the right writer that shares the vision for where I think the material should go, and finding someone, the right partner to finance the building of the script. And the right then them finding the right director And then, you know, the cast, which is so critical as well. And just, you know, down to costume designer, DP, et cetera. So it's about, it's about vision and building a team to support and execute that vision.
Ah, cool. So first off, congratulations on you receiving the Shot Caller Award on this year's BET Black Girls Rock Award show.
I know. It was very cool. It was very, very cool.
Now, I ain't got no coins to be sharing the audio on this, but one thing that you did say that stood out to me was that you mentioned in your acceptance speech about how your father passed his love of a film to you. And I was curious, talk to me about that, like, you know, you growing up watching film, and more importantly, what were some of the favorite movies you watched growing up?
Oh, my God. Yeah, my father was the biggest film and television buff that I have ever known. And so I grew up in a household where, you know, some people talk about politics at the dinner table. We talked about movies and television. And so I understood early on that they had a huge impact on how I saw the world and therefore how other people saw the world. You know, James Bond was huge in my household. Okay, it was huge. I'm still the biggest James Bond fan, as is my brother. You know, that was a big deal for us. You know, when I was a little girl, you know, from Mary Poppins, you know, The Sound of Music. I mean, those kind of classics were you know, hugely impactful. And then I go back. I mean, really, I've always loved the older movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Audrey Hepburn is an icon of mine, and I think, you know, and I still say something. That's very Audrey, you know, which is like the ultimate compliment to somebody from a style standpoint. But also, you know, when you go back to those days, you know, when there were the great actresses, the Betty Davises, the Joan Crawfords, you know, the Barbara Stanwyck. They had real roles, and they were independent and strong and fierce. And then, you know, we went through a period where women were softer and they became like the arm candy of the male leads. And hopefully we're moving, particularly as more women are behind the camera and producing and writing, that we're going back to strong women in cinema again.
Yeah, that's an interesting look at it. Yeah, because I was thinking when you said Barbara Stanwyck and Joan Crawford, they were such pillars of strong women leads,
right? Yes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Cool. One of the things I thought was interesting is that you graduated from Harvard Law. And then you left law. And I noticed, like, you know, Shonda Rhimes and, you know, John Grisham. Like, why do you hate the law so much? Just joking. What is it? What makes you decide to leave and move to Hollywood? Was it something that you realized later on that this was not your passion? Or, like...
No, I always wanted to make film and television. I just didn't know how to do it. I didn't know anybody in Hollywood. And even though I grew up, you know, 6 through 15 in Pasadena, California, I might as well have been 3,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I didn't see anybody who looked like me that was, you know, had any power in the industry. So I did the safe thing. I went to law. I practiced law at big firms and big corporations, and I just got to the point where I was like, I didn't enjoy it. You know, I was a really good lawyer, but I would know I would never be a great lawyer because I didn't love it. And you have to love something, you know, to really do your, you know, just to totally dive into. And so I decided to take a chance and to pursue my dream. And I figured, you know, that's the beauty of having a law degree and of having like really great, you know, top-notch experience under my belt, that if I failed, I would have a career to come back to.
Mm-hmm. 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 So I read that you had to, when you first got started, you had to garner the courage to speak to Denzel. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a true story, and it's a funny story. It's very much a Hollywood story. I mean, I was at Columbia Pictures. I had been the executive assistant to the chairman, Frank Price, was my first big, great mentor in Hollywood. And when he left, ousted really, he put me on the creative staff at Columbia Pictures, and I'd been there for a few months, and I was walking across the lot one day going to lunch, and I saw Denzel, and he had a deal at TriStar, and I didn't know him, and something just said to me, you know, go introduce yourself. So I went up, I introduced myself, you know, I said, well, if you ever have any projects that you'd like to talk about, bringing, you know, to Columbia, you know, I'd be more than happy to. He said, great, let's get together tomorrow. And I was like, oh, okay, you know. And so I go on to lunch, and I go back. And I am, you know, as I like to tell people, you know, because I had been Frank Price's person, and he was no longer there, you know, I was like the lone Democrat in a Republican White House.
Oh,
I had a little, literally like a broom closet of an office way in the back. And, you know, I mean, I was, you know. And so I go back to my little broom closet after lunch, and my phone rings, and it's Doug McHenry. And I think people will remember Doug McHenry was one of the, was a major Hollywood producer. He did New Jack City, and he actually directed as well, Jason's Lyric. And Doug had been ahead of me at Harvard and was like a big brother. And so he said, you know, oh, I just hooked you up, Deborah. And I'm like, what are you talking about, Doug? And he said, I just had lunch with Denzel. And he said he was looking for somebody to run his production company. And I told him I had the perfect person, you know, moi. And he said, oh, my God, I just met him like an hour and a half ago.
Oh,
and
wow.
Doug said, Denzel said the same thing. So the next day, I'm in my little cubbyhole in the office, and I get this phone call from his assistant saying, you know, Mr. Washington would like to come by and talk to you. Will you be in your office? And I'm like, yes, I will stay in my office. And so he comes by, you know, with a baseball cap pulled low and a backpack. And we just talked for about an hour and a half and realized we saw the world very much the same way and, you know, wanted to make the same kind of movies. And so the next week I went to go run his production company. And it was, I learned so much from him and just being with him during that journey, because he had gotten his Oscar for Glory. Malcolm was in the can, but had not come out yet. So the first time I went to the Academy Awards was when he was nominated for Best Picture, for Best Actor. And so I was able to take that journey with him from very well-respected actor to, you know, the big movie star that he continues to be today.
Awesome. Awesome. That really is a Hollywood story. but you know, something that and I was, you know, reading and looking at some of the videos, one of the things that so many people talk to you about is your legacy for young women and women of color, specifically The Princess Diaries, Cheetah Girls, Cinderella, and Sister of the Traveling Pants. I mean, do you young girls still watch those films? Do you still feel like this is your legacy? Or
I mean, it's certainly part of my legacy. I mean, I think my legacy is more, you know, my legacy is women and people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Because since then, I've done Just Right, and I've done, you know, Sparkle, and I've, you know, TV shows, you know, Missing and stuff, you know, with Vanessa, Vivica Fox. But so women have, by and large, been at the center of the things that I have done. There was a period where, you know, obviously I was kind of, I mean, I think at one point Variety called me the queen of tween, you know, and it was great. And you know, and I enjoyed it. And also, you know, it's interesting because, and I discovered a lot of talent and I nurtured a lot of careers. I mean, you know, Anne Hathaway, Princess Diaries was her first movie, and I hired Blake Lively out of Burbank High School when she was 15 years old. She'd never worked before, and I put Jesse Williams in his first movie, and Shonda Rhimes was my intern, you know, when she was at USC in graduate school, and, you know, I mean, it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the great thing is that so many of those people are at the, in the prime of their careers right now, and so it's, and we still have, you know, great relationships. So it certainly it's a good support for career longevity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I when I look at your body of work, I do love Just Right. I love all your films. I do. But one of the things that always stands out to me is you, by far, as you just said, you believe in strong female characters that I think is sometimes very missing. And I know that you mentioned in your acceptance speech about, you know, sometimes you could be the only one in the room, right? And you said you make sure that before that door closes, you put your foot in the door, right?
Yeah.
So, can you give me just for a point of reference, what was it like before when you first started and what you dealt with? And what were some of the lessons you learned by being that only person in the room sometimes?
You know, in some ways, Hollywood was about a decade behind, and it probably still is, you know, the business world in general in terms of, you know, inclusion. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like I said, I've worked at big law firms, I've worked at big corporations, but at least there were some people, you know, mm-hmm. in the mix. I got to Columbia Pictures. There was like nobody. There was one, oh my God, and I'm blanking on his name. There was an executive. He had been in the group Sha-Na-Na, in the singing group Sha-Na-Na. He was an executive, lovely guy. He did not last long. I mean, it was like you could count on one hand. Again, particularly in film, it's not that much different, but it's a little better.
Okay.
I spent the year before I came to Hollywood really trying to understand how the business was structured and figuring out what it was that I wanted to do. And I went to conferences and read books and talked to anybody who would talk to me. And I finally figured out, you know, I wanted to make movies. I knew I wanted to make movies, and that either the studio executive or the producer, you know, were the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just assumed, you know, because I always grew up believing that if work somebody else is doing it, I can do it, you know. And then when I got to Hollywood, and it was like nobody. I mean, it was like, you know, there was Suzanne DePass, who, you know, on the TV side had done, or I guess was about to do Lonesome Dove, and obviously had this huge career with music as well. But there was nobody. And so I realized quickly that it wasn't, you know, where my white male counterparts started out saying, okay, well, how am I going to make, you know, money, and how am I going to do, you know, like position myself and blah, blah, blah. I really had to start out, you know, like 10 paces behind, saying, how am I going to convince this industry that a black woman can produce a mainstream Hollywood movie like anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
So there were those moments, you know, like the classic, I'm in the room, you know, it's all white guys, and somebody turns to me and says, you know, can you get me a cup of coffee?
Wow.
You know, just assuming that I couldn't possibly be an executive. You know, there were those times where when I finally, you know, did cross over and I'm sitting at the creative executive table, we're discussing things, and a question would come up about black people, anything, like, what's it like in a Baptist church, what's it, whatever, whatever, and everybody would turn to me and say, what do you think? And I would be like, I don't know. Like, I mean, why am I am not, you know, I'm not the universal black person.
You had it all on your shoulders, huh?
Yeah, it was just a very, very different time. So, and I think, when, you know, in retrospect, I think one of the things that really helped me was that I had a life outside of Hollywood. You know, I had had a career before as a lawyer, you know, very successfully, and I had a lot of friends that were not in the business who could care less, you know, whether, I had a movie coming out or whatever, who just, you know, loved me. And so I didn't feel, even though I was more isolated in Hollywood, I wasn't isolated in the world. And that was hugely important.
Oh, wow. That's a great lesson. So let's shift gears. Let's talk about Harriet. You know, this is getting ready to come out.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited. So tell me, how did you first come into this project?
So I'm actually right in the middle of figuring out exactly how many years ago, but let's say six or somewhere in that neighborhood. My friend Greg Howard called me and said that he had a script about Harriet Tubman at Disney that had been there for a few years, and that, you know, Disney was never going to make it because it's just not the type of thing that they were going to do, and that we should put it together and take it out. And I have my own production company for 20 years that was based at Disney, and I was, you know, very much there at the time. And so when, you know, honestly, when we had the conversation, I was like, oh, this is going to be boring, it's going to be about slavery, it's going to be brutal. But I was going to read it because Greg was my friend. And I read it, and the thing that Greg did is he positioned Harriet as a historical action heroine, which is very much who she was. And it was exciting, and it was a really kind of thrilling way to tell what was an amazing story. And, you know, I'm a student of African-American history. I'm pretty good. There was a lot of stuff that I didn't know about her life that, and I figured if I didn't know it, many Americans or, you know, actually people around the world wouldn't know it either. And so it would be intriguing for people who knew her name, who knew a little bit about her, but to find out how rich and full her life truly was.
Awesome. Awesome. So when I think about it, like you were just mentioning about things you didn't know, but typically when people see Harriet Tubman, you know, they see the kind of archive things of her and her when she was older, when she was already retired from this and we never really saw who Harriet Tubman was when she was in her prime, when she was actually, you know, helping free slaves and being part of the Underground Railroads.
Right.
So one of the things I found interesting, I did not know this, that Harriet Tubman was only 5 feet tall. I was like, what?
Was only 5 feet tall. No, and listen, the woman, to your point, we've only seen these pictures of her where she looked, you know, grim and, you know, unattractive and just kind of just asexual.
Mm-hmm.
This woman was married twice. Her second husband was 22 years her junior and stayed with her until she died at 91 years old. Okay? She had, you know, she was 5 feet tall, but and accomplished so much. I mean, this, you know, she couldn't read, she couldn't write. She was born into slavery, destined to remain in slavery, but she, you know, had the wherewithal to say, no, this is not how I'm going to live my life.
That's so cool. That's so cool. I can't wait. So one of the things that you hear, I mean, maybe you've heard this before. I've heard a lot as a film critic about how we, especially of a lot of black films, there's a lot of edutainment, meaning that there's a lot of historical stories that happen and they do well or sometimes they don't in the box office. But I want to know, like, how do you feel about stories like Harriet or more stories that teach us our history? Because personally, I feel that is lacking, but you know, as a producer, when you're in the room and you get a script like this, what goes through your mind and what is your process for thinking through it?
I mean, I don't even understand that comment. Like, how many movies in the history of Hollywood have there been made about, you know, quote-unquote mainstream white history?
Oh, God,
or about
so
European
many.
History?
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought there's a new movie on the Midway coming out again. I don't even understand that. And we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of black history. And the key is, I mean, and that's also why this approach of positioning Harriet as, you know, in some ways, this is like a superhero origin story.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our goal to make something that was entertaining, that wasn't just about, you know, this is not a movie about slavery. It's about freedom, and it's about empowerment, and it's meant to be inspirational, and it's meant to inspire, you know, young girls and women, and I mean, in addition to everybody else, that you can really be whoever you want to be, and that that each and every one of us has the ability to make a difference in our world, in our family, in our schools, in our churches, in our cities, in our country, in the world, because that's what she did.
Exactly. I feel a lot of times when people ask me that question or have those comments, I really realize how whitewashed their history and view of themselves actually is. And unfortunately, it permeates into how we look at everything in our culture. Not us, but some people in their culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I wanted to know something because I was reading your Twitter feed and you are so positive. Like, it just you have like the best Twitter feed of all time. And I wanted to know.
Thank you.
It's just really good. I mean, there's just high fives and kudos everywhere. And I love it.
And my handle is Deborah, D-E-B-R-A-M Chase. So come on, join me on Twitter. You're giving me shout out.
But my big question to you is, what motivates and inspires you? Because to be so positive as you are, like, I'm just curious, like, what gets you going?
You know what? I think at this point in my life, you just realize that your attitude determines a lot. You know, if you walk around with your head down, looking at the ground, and, you know, put out negative energy, that's what you're going to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
That's what I say, God knows, I have bad days, we go through bad periods, you know, it's life, stuff happens. But I think, you know, my mantra these days is you just have to keep moving forward. You just have to keep moving towards, you know, light and happiness and joy, because the alternative is not acceptable.
I'm feeling good right
thank
now.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I have to remind November 1.
Yes,
we're in theaters everywhere. Please turn out opening weekend. Nowadays more than ever, you know, with everything that's going on with streaming, it's just so important what happens that opening weekend.
Absolutely.
That determines whether or not you get to stay in the theaters and really, you know, get the push.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate this immensely.
Thank you.
That was Deborah Martin Chase sharing some positive vibes and some truths worth mentioning. Harriet opens in theaters nationwide on Friday, November the 1st. Now, we've only scratched the surface about people of color in history, and unfortunately, we'll have to save that for another day. But I do encourage you, if you haven't already seen it, check out the New York Times Magazine's The 1619 Project. It's an eye-opening exploration of people of the diaspora and the long journey we've taken. And that's our show. Thanks again to Deborah Martin Chase for the discussion. And did you know that AFCA had its first TV Honors Award show over the summer? Well, they did. And you can find out all the honorees along with photos from the event on our website. So until next time, keep your head up.